This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson.
Tangerology straight ahead of us has a population of around 400.
A shrinking island in Chesapeake Bay has become a national battleground in the debate over climate change.
The island is very independent. They have their own mayor, their own city council, and they have one-time cop.
90 miles south of Washington, D.C. is Tangier Island. You can only get there by boat. It's home to barely 600 full-time residents, commercial crabbers, school teachers, local businessmen and women. Most of them have known their neighbors for generations, and many of the island's residents trace their lineages right back to the town's colonial origins. But by all indications, the island's days are numbered. That's just ahead on 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the NPR Wine Club. Discover hand-selected wines from award-winning vineyards around the world. Learn the stories behind each one and enjoy unique bottles inspired by your favorite NPR shows. All with the convenience of home delivery. A special welcome offer includes a bottle of Weekend Edition Cabernet Sauvignon. If you're 21 years or older, join in the fun at nprwineclub.org.
As soon as you wake up, you need the latest. That's why Up First is here. It's NPR's morning news podcast. In just 10 minutes or so, you can start your day informed. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us here in studio is Earl Smith, journalist and author of Chesapeake Requiem, A Year with the Watermen of Vanishing Tangier Island. He spent a year documenting the island and living there. Earl, welcome to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
And joining us on the line is James Uker Estridge, the mayor of Tangier Island. Mayor Estridge, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Earl Smith, what's the most striking sign of this change? Was there anything that you noticed over the course of the time that you spent there reporting on the island, or anything that people on Tangier Island told you struck them the most that was the biggest change?
Well, I've been to the island many times back in 1999 and 2000, and then returned in 2016. And I think that one of the most striking differences that I saw, and there were many differences that were obvious from that the second I stepped off the mailboat, was that this is an island that's shaped roughly like a seahorse. And for most of its history, one of its identifying features has been a long curling tail, a spit of sand probably 2 miles long. And on one of my first days back to the island in 2016, I took a walk on the beach and found that in place of that curling tail, there was just a stump. The spit had disappeared, and that came as a shock.
It must have been a bit of a shock to kind of see a change in not that much time.
Well, Uker himself had taken me in his boat back in 2000 down to the spit and had shown me places where he'd played as a boy and pointed offshore, 100, 200 yards to places that had been high and dry in his boyhood. And Uker and I are the same age, born on the same day, actually. And so this had happened fast. And so it was a shock, but in the context of all of the changes that have been happening to Tangier for a long time now, only so much of one.
Mr. Mayor, what's the conversation like among people on Tangier Island about what's going on? Are people concerned? Are they not worried about it? Do people have a plan to deal with it? If I was to eavesdrop on you and your neighbors talking about all this, what might I hear?
The main concern with the citizens on the island is the erosion, the island getting smaller. I mean, it's always on everybody's mind, and that we need protection from the erosion, and especially during hurricane season. This is hurricane season, and it's always on everybody's mind that, you know, if we do get a storm, how much of the island will disappear, and that's our main concern here.
Talk to me a little bit more about that call with the president. Did that set your mind at ease at all in terms of the future of the island or what was going to be done to try to help it, to try to save it?
It did. Knowing that President Trump did call, and we talked briefly about the erosion problem and that we do need protection. And since the call, you know, we've been in touch quite a bit with the Interior Department and Fish and Wildlife. And of course, the funding for the seawall is going to have to come through Congress, but we're hoping that President Trump will, you know, use his influence to help us get the money that we do need, and we're hoping we'll get it in time to protect what we have left.
Earl, talk a little bit more about the threat to Tangier Island. You describe in the book, you describe the shore of Tangier as erosive and sneaky and worthy of constant vigilance.
Yeah, well, this is not an island with sandy beaches. This is an island of a peaty soil that in which marsh grass is rooted. So when waves strike it, they don't roll up and over. They smack it head on and break off big chunks, big tumps of marsh. And there's not a lot of island to give up. This is it's roughly a mile wide, three long. Most of it is 70% or better is salt marsh, and it doesn't even clear a foot above the tides. And the few exceptions are three ribs of sandy loam that rise almost imperceptibly from the marsh. And with storms, that marsh is rendered into open water. High ground is turned into marsh, and the bay advances ever closer to the homes there.
Historically, this isn't the first time that the waters have risen around Tangier Island. I mean, there must have been other times historically, Earl, where the water line went up and it went down, probably never like this, though.
Well, it's not a question of the water going up or down it is now, but in since 1850, Tangier's lost two-thirds of its landmass, and it averages more than 8 acres per year. And throughout the 19th century, you saw erosion pretty steadily claim the western side of the island. You have a lot of fetch west of Tangier, a lot of open water, that plenty of room for waves to build. And what you've seen in the 20th century, though, is that process has accelerated. Tangier has lost land at an increasing rate, and it's not a separate issue from sea level rise. The two are interlinked. The higher the water climbs, and the climb might be microscopic year to year, but the higher that water climbs, the more erosive the power of the waves, and the greater the issue.
Mayor Eskridge, how are you seeing this affect people who live on your island? Are there folks that you know that have been displaced, that have lost their homes, that have lost their livelihoods because of this changing shoreline?
I've seen, the watermen. We have our crab houses, we call it, or crab shanties out in the harbor area. And that's where the boats are tied, the crab traps are stored, and that's where we shed the soft crabs. And I've seen over the years, especially during Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Isabel and other storms, that we've lost quite a few of these businesses out in the harbor. And without the protection, people hesitate to rebuild because, we can get another storm and the same thing will happen. So I think a lot of the people are discouraged, and I try to convince them to, not to lose hope. But I'm sure if we got the protection that we needed, seawall, then, they would be willing to invest, and their minds would be at ease about the problem.
And just for those of us who've never been to Tangier Island, how central is crab fishing to your economy? Is the island's entire economy built around crab fishing, or are there other ways that people primarily make their living? Is crab fishing kind of it?
It's the main source of income on the island. I mean, some of the folks over here, they work on tugboats with different tugboat companies, and we have tourism. We welcome tourists to the island, but first and foremost, we're a crabbing and oystering community. It's seafood that keeps the ball rolling out here.
I wonder if you're, Mr. Mayor, if you are encouraged, or what your thoughts are on the president's ability to push through more funds based on his views on climate. He's expressed real skepticism in the past about climate change. And so he's said some things in the past publicly that would kind of contradict this idea that the threat that your island faces is even real. What do you make of that?
When we talked briefly, but we were on the same page with the climate change and sea level rise, but he did understand that our problem first and foremost is the erosion. And sea level rise may be occurring, but it's at a rate that I can't detect it. I've been on the water for 50 years, and I just can't see any difference. But the erosion problem, you can see a difference daily almost. And I tell folks erosion will take us away from here long before sea level rise affects us.
I don't mean to be rude, Mr. Mayor, but aren't those the same problem? I mean, aren't the shores eroding because the seas are rising?
No, not really. I mean, this erosion problem's been going on since the island was discovered. I mean, we've lost 2/3 of the island, and a lot of the island disappeared in the 1800s. I mean, we have tree stumps well offshore that were probably there in the either late 1700s or early 1800s. And, you know, it was all due to erosion then. And it's just this erosion problem. You can see it. You can see it daily. You can make marks along the shoreline, and if you get a storm, you can actually see how much land you've lost in just a few days' time.
I appreciate you giving us a sense of some of the island's history, Mr. Mayor, in terms of erosion patterns over time. You know, I don't know you and I don't know the people on the island, but I think if someone came to my home and said, there's radiation where you live, we have to do something about this, I would want it handled. And I can't see radiation, but I know it's a threat. Why do you have to see the sea level rise to believe it's a threat? I mean, does it matter if you can see it?
Well, yeah, I base my decisions on what I'm seeing and not seeing. And I mean, take the marshland. That's mostly Tangier is made up of marshland. The marshland's only a few inches above sea level. And that same marshland, when I was a small boy, was a few inches above sea level. So, I mean, if sea level is occurring, a lot of those marshes should be underwater now permanently. And with me, this sea level rise debate is not a political issue to me. If I see the sea level rise, then I'll say so. I mean, we're only 4 feet above sea level, so if the sea level's rising and I see it, I'll say so. I'm just not seeing it.
Earl,
it's not a political thing with me.
Earl,
well, I think you do see it. You see it consciously, but you're misidentifying it. That's just my guess, Hooker. Because if you look at, the northern mile of the island is uninhabited marsh, a part of the island that Tangiermen call uppers. And if you look at the interior waterways and the ponding at uppers, it's the bulk of the damage has been done just in the last 50 years. The size of the inlets there, Tom's Gut in particular, one of the big interior waterways, it's doubled in that amount of time. And that's marsh that's drowning. That is the water coming up, the land going down, marsh unable to accrete to keep ahead of it and simply drowning in the water.
I wonder, Mayor Eskridge, if there is a point at which you would recommend that people relocate. I know you're saying that you're trying to help people keep the faith and stay put and try to work this out, but what's the line for you? Is there a point at which you would feel it's more prudent to relocate from Tangier Island than to stay?
There may come a day, but right now we're not looking at that. We're not even going there. I mean, we've been out here for hundreds of years, and we're not even going there. We're not thinking about that, we're going to have to relocate and leave our homes and our businesses and start over on the mainland. It may happen down the road, but right now we're not looking at it. Our focus is on trying to get the protection we need. And if sea level rise is occurring, if we can get the protection from the wave action, then we can actually build the island up. It was done back in the 1930s. They would pump material onto the island when they would deepen the navigational channel and build the island up. What used to be wetlands, we have homes there now and trees growing. So we can address if sea level rise is occurring, we can address that if we get protection from the wave action.
And I can only imagine what that would mean for you if you did have to leave. That would have to be really tough.
Yeah, I mean, just to start over, to rebuild, and actually, I don't even know how we would go about it, to still work on the water. I mean, to be a crabber. I mean, it's we have our businesses in the harbor here, and I don't know. It's just something we don't really think about. And when we talk about saving Tangier, it's not just saving a piece of land. I'm talking about saving a people, a culture, a way of life.
Right. And I do want to talk more about what would have to be done to save those people, to save that culture, to save that way of life when we continue our conversation. We're speaking to James Uker Eskridge, the mayor of Tangier Island, and Earl Swift, the author of the new book Chesapeake Requiem. We'll talk more about the publicity, the politics, and the perhaps impossible problem of saving the island. Perhaps impossible, but perhaps not. Stay close.
Support for 1A and the following message come from American Express. These days, keeping up with everything in the news is hard, whether it's politics or pop culture. American Express believes it's always easier to stay ahead when there's someone behind you. Easier to focus on what matters, to follow what interests you, to explore, to discover. And with American Express, you don't have to go it alone because they have your back. Don't live life without it.
Did cutting taxes actually grow the economy?
And what makes DJ Khaled the king of pop music?
The Indicator, a daily podcast where we tackle the big economic questions.
Before we bring in our next few guests, I wanted to get to some of your comments. John in Rochester, New York writes, "For decades, there were people who refused to believe that smoking causes cancer. Turns out that cancer doesn't care if you believe in it or not. Climate change doesn't care either. It would be nice for future generations if we could get together and do something to limit the climate damage. But you can continue to call it a quote-unquote hoax as they evacuate you from your flooding homes. After all, some folks continue to smoke even while lying in the cancer ward." Mayor Eskridge, what would you say to John about his comment?
Like I said earlier, this sea level rise debate, I'm like the folks in Missouri, the show me state. You show me that the sea level's rising and I'll shout it from the rooftops. The reason our focus is on the erosion, take the west side of the island. We were losing 25 to 30 feet of shoreline each year, and we had a stone seawall placed along most of the west side, and that was completed in 1989. And since then, we haven't lost one inch of shoreline. So it works. We know it works. And right now, Tangier is very savable. I mean, the money's there. And once we, like I said earlier, once we get the wall around Tangier to protect us from the wave action, and then if sea level rise is occurring, we'll deal with it. But our concern now is erosion, because without the west side seawall completed, when that was completed in 89, our airstrip, our treatment plant, sewage treatment plant, mm-hmm. our boatyard, and lots of the homes on the south end of the island would be in the Chesapeake Bay now.
Well, I hear you in terms of wanting to see the evidence, in terms of that kind of show me spirit. So let's add two people to the conversation whose job it is to show what's happening on Tangier Island and figure out what to do about it. Joining us from WCVE in Richmond, Virginia, is Molly Mitchell, a marine scientist with the Virginia Institute of Marine Science at the College of William and Mary. Molly, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Susan Connor, the project director at the Army Corps of Engineers in Norfolk, Virginia, with some ideas on how to save Tangier Island. Susan, welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
So what exactly are we seeing, Molly? I mean, the mayor asks a worthwhile question. You know, erosion seems to be an issue, still questioning the sea level rise piece. So show me. One of our listeners, Peter, asked on Facebook for the factors involving sea level rise and land lowering and erosion. So what exactly do we know, scientifically, data-wise, about what's happening to this island?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We're actually very fortunate in Virginia that we have a really long record of sea levels. There is a gauge put in at Sewell's Point in Norfolk at the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay, and it was put in around 1930, a little bit before that. So we have a continuous record of water levels there since that time, and then we have other tide gauges throughout the Chesapeake Bay that were put in later. And so what we can see on those tide gauges is that Since the time we started measuring it, sea level has been coming up. Now, it has been coming up faster in the past 30 years than it was in the beginning of the record. So that seems to be speeding up. And so the rate right now in Virginia is about twice the global average. So a portion of that is subsidence. It's the land sinking. And a portion of that is sea level rise and ocean dynamics.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear on what you just said. You said that the water levels have risen more in the last 30 years. Is that right?
They've been rising a little bit faster.
And how long does the record go back?
It goes back to 1928, I think.
In the span of that amount of time, do you consider those last 30 years ecologically significant? I mean, you know, the Earth moves in cycles of centuries and millennia. Are the last 30 years really that different from what we know?
Well, so that's the big question. It does seem like processes have been changing. A lot of the science is pointing towards glaciers melting faster. And so that's understandable as glaciers get smaller. Just as small ice cubes melt faster than big ice cubes, small glaciers melt faster. So it does seem like sea level rise is accelerating.
Susan Connor. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask Susan Connor about the possible solutions and kind of what the thought process has been up to here, starting with the seawall. We got a number of questions about the potential for a seawall in Tangier Island. Brian emailed, "This place is an island. Wouldn't a seawall have to go all the way around for it to work? Then what? They would be living in a bowl and just waiting for the water to come over the top? This sounds too much like parts of New Orleans. What would the cost be to the U.S. taxpayers to protect such a small area? My heart goes out to these people, but is it worth it?" Susan, give us a sense, starting just with this idea of the seawall. What would that involve? How would it work? What would it cost? How much has that been thought through?
So that's a great comment. We did build a seawall near the airstrip on Tangier, as Mayor Eskridge mentioned, in the 80s. Since then, we've looked at multiple solutions on Tangier. We do next year have a jetty going in. That jetty will protect the Federal Navigation Channel, decrease wave action, and hopefully protect some of the watermen facilities within Tangier Island. But really, a seawall of the magnitude to really protect the entire island hasn't been studied yet. It is something that we have talked about. We've actually, there has been a request to Congress for a study authority. We would actually need a larger study authority to look at that large seawall. We do have some smaller studies that have looked at breakwaters. We've looked at some natural solutions with beach and dune and wetlands. And as Mayor Eskridge mentioned earlier, we have in the past used dredge material to build up the island. And that is one of the potential solutions in the future if we were to do a seawall around portions of the island or all of the island. We would also be looking at the use of dredge material on a larger scale. In the past, we've used it from the navigation channels within the island. Now we're talking about dredge material from the Chesapeake Bay channels. Could that be used on the island to provide additional elevation and shoreline protection? As for cost, that is one of the really significant issues on working on Tangier. The jetty that we're about to build is on the magnitude of about $3 million. The seawall that was built in the 80s was about $10 million. If you're looking at doing a seawall around significant portions or all of the island, you're definitely talking about greater than $50 million, potentially in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
So those, we haven't done the full study yet, but, you know, very large amounts of funding needed for that type of project.
And I just want to make sure I'm clear. When you talk about dredge material, is that kind of like what they do on some of the beaches in Florida, where they kind of pull sand out of the water and use it to basically rebuild the beach, kind of dredging out from the water and turning it into land?
Absolutely. And we do it here in the Hampton Roads area, the Virginia Beach beaches, and the city of Norfolk. Most areas, with the Corps of Engineers, if we're dredging material up, if we can place it beneficially, that's much better than just overboard placement or placing on an upland site. So we always look to see if we can place it somewhere that it would be helpful. We have to do that in a way that is appropriate according to the grain size. So if you have sand material, you're looking for a sandy area, there is a spit down at the southern end of Tangier, where sandy material has been or could be placed. But a lot of the material would also be silty, really kind of muddy material that could be used for marsh restoration or to build up other areas in a more upland site.
Well, Earl Swift, I wonder what your take is, because you studied a number of coastlines that are going through this, or at least that's been a reporting interest of yours for a while, about whether or not this could move through practically, politically. I mean, there are an array of climate change impacts that the U.S. and the world have to deal with. Catherine emailed, they want the federal government to build their seawall, but it's also on the hook, the federal government, is also on the hook for wildfires, more virulent storms and hurricanes, bailing out federal flood insurance, and keeping coastline cities from going underwater in the coming decades. Farmers and ranchers will need assistance as the growing seasons shift. There won't be enough to pay for engineering and recovery necessary to fight a crisis we've seen coming for 50 years and decided to do too little to ameliorate. It will be triage. Not everything can be saved, especially by the federal government.
Well, I think your listener is absolutely right in the sense that we don't have the time, the money, or the technological means to save every community that ultimately will be threatened by sea level rise. We've got 88,000 miles of coastline. A lot of that's going to be imperiled. So we're going to have to develop a rubric for deciding what we save and what we surrender. And Tangier presents us with an inconvenient first choice. You know, what do we do about Tangier? And it's you can debate climate change versus erosion. Ultimately, it's almost moot. The fact is we have a slow motion natural disaster underway on the island, and we've got to decide what we're going to do about it.
I should note that some of you have expressed very warm feelings about Tangier Island, including Maria, who's listening in Alma, Michigan. Maria writes, in 1972, my parents spent their honeymoon on Tangier Island. They were there when Hurricane Agnes made its trip up the East Coast, including the Chesapeake Bay. The island survived okay, but I am wondering if Tangier would survive another hurricane with the possibility that they wouldn't make it to 2025. What I know of the island is that it is more than just a population of people, but it is a tight community with its own culture, its own dialect. It would be devastating in more ways than one to lose the island. Mayor Eskridge, I wonder if I could ask you kind of a cold clinical financial question. I mean, I do take the point of Maria, who says there's a wonderful culture of people on your island, and of Earl as well. I also take the point of some of our other listeners who say, we got priorities, and there are differing views on climate change from some of your residents than the scientific consensus. If it came down in Congress to saving Tangier Island or fighting the Mendocino Complex wildfire, right? Because we can't spend the same dollar twice. If that kind of a hard cut had to be made, what's your case to Congress? What's your case to the American people as to why we should save your home?
My argument would be, well, I hear folks that say that, you know, it's not enough people involved that we should spend that kind of money on. But my argument is, over the years since World War One, we've had, I don't even know what the number is of folks to serve in the military since then. I lost a brother in Vietnam in 69. He was ready to be married, already working underwater, 21. And he went over to Vietnam and never returned. And as the folks were serving in the military, the government thought we were worthwhile then, the folks on Tangier, to serve in the military. So now we're in desperate need of help from the government. And, that's one of my arguments, that our citizens were valuable when they were needed in the service. And now I would hope they would still be deemed valuable to save.
Molly, before we're out of time, I wonder what the timeline looks like for Tangier Island. How long are we looking at before things really start to get hairy?
So if sea level rise continues the way it has been the past 30 years, we're looking at just under 2 feet of sea level rise by 2050. So, you know, depending on the elevations, that tells you what the threat is.
And Susan Connor, before we go, what's the next step in terms of the government's process with Tangier Island, briefly?
Sure. We are looking for a study authority from Congress to do a large-scale study. So we really think a holistic look at Tangier in order to come up with a long-term solution for such the unique place that Tangier is.
Susan Connor, Program Director at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Susan, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Molly Mitchell, a marine scientist. Molly, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tangier Island Mayor James Eskridge. Mr. Mayor, we appreciate your time, sir. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
And Earl Swift, the author of Chesapeake Requiem, A Year with the Watermen of Vanishing Tangier Island. Thanks, Earl.
It's been a pleasure.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.